Hello and welcome to Gin and Spooks. I'm Emma.
And I'm Laura.
And what are we talking about today, Laura?
It's weird doing it this way around. We are talking about vampires.
Yes! Mm. I feel like we just get more like, what's the word?
Overexcited.
Cheerier.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll go with overexcited. That's a better, that's a more intellectual word. And cheerier.
Yeah, each topic our cheer gets more and more intense. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, like cannibals. We were fucking living for that shit.
We were. I'm not quite as excited about vampires as I was for cannibals, but I'm still pretty excited.
I mean, I'm excited, but I'm just going to have to remember to calm down and remember that not everyone likes vampires.
No.
There is, like, the vampire werewolf debate, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. I was literally thinking, when you said not everyone likes vampires, my brain went, Jacob Black, he hates vampires. As in, Jacob from Twilight, like
he's a real person. Yeah. He did imprint on, like, Arthur vampire.
He imprinted on, like, Bella's unborn child, didn't he, kinda?
Yeah. When he calls her Nessie, I remember that.
That was one of the best bits.
It's the best bit in the book, but it's shit in the film, because I'm like, yeah, like, I wanted more.
Do you know, I can't, it's so long ago since I read and watched the films, I just can't remember.
I watched the films recently. I don't like New Moon because I think Bella's an absolute twat. I think Bella's an absolute twat anyway. But
yeah,
in New
is.
Moon, I was like, get a grip of yourself.
Yeah.
Come on.
I can't
get out of bed. Wash your fucking greasy hair.
Yeah. Emma, we're like a few seconds into this podcast about vampires and already talking about fucking Twilight. Out of all the like vampire films there are, we're talking about Twilight. We haven't even gone over what we're drinking and we've actually coordinated a cocktail tonight.
Shit, yes we have. Okay, so what are we drinking tonight, Laura?
Well, we are drinking some sort of gin and tonic sangria combo.
Sangria. Ah. I don't know why I did that.
I love it though. Yeah, it's gin, tonic, and white wine, and a shit ton of lime and cucumber. It's
did
tasty
you
though.
Get tonic water?
No, I got sparkling water because I'm a cheapskate.
I got sparkling water.
Yeah. I was like, this drink, I'm taking a risk drinking this drink anyway with this amount of cucumber in it. So I don't want to risk putting tonic in, which I don't like, and ruining it even further. So I'm going to get sparkling water for like 12p rather than tonic for like 40p, whatever it was.
I mean, I think you wouldn't have liked the Bloody Mary. I don't think I would either.
I would like to try them one day, but
I'll make you one. I'll just make you the one because apparently if you have too much tomato juice, it's quite bad for you anyway.
Mm.
Which is like, you know, most things in life.
Yeah.
You know.
Like that man that drank too much carrot juice and turned orange. There's a Netflix series that I went through a phase of watching a very long time ago. And I can't remember what it's called. It was like, it's something like Weird and Unfortunate Ways to Die or something. And there was one guy that died because he drank too much carrot juice and he turned orange. And it was essentially a vitamin D overdose. Vitamin D overdose or something. 10 out of 10 would recommend that show. It's one of those stupid ones where they recreate stuff and all sorts. But it was so interesting.
I feel really bad for laughing, but what the fuck? Why are you going out and doing
really
this?
Liked
I mean,
carrots.
Thank you for finding the limitations of the human anatomy.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, stop.
Yeah. I feel like, I can't remember, I think he was just eating a lot of carrot juice. Anyway,
vampires. I feel that tastes like wank, though.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I only like carrots if they're roasted or...
with honey.
If they're raw and dipped in something like sour cream dip or sour
like
cream and chard dip.
Sweet chili mayo.
Yeah, sweet sweet chili mayo. I miss that. Or hummus. I'm all right with hummus too, but no, the sweet chili mayo is the one.
No.
Anyway.
I'm hungry now.
I know. Damn it. Anyway, so I've got some little bits of information about vampires. Kind of throughout history, so we'll start with those. shall we?
Yes, we shall. We shall.
I mean, I feel like everybody knows, like, essentially what a vampire is. But a vampire is a creature from folklore that feeds on the blood of the living. The notion of vampirism has existed for millennia in cultures from all over the world. So, like, the ancient Mesopotamians, Hebrews, ancient Greeks, Manipuri, Romans, they've all got some, they all have tales of some sort of demon or spirit that can be considered precursors to the modern vampire. The vampires we know today stem from early 18th century Southern European folklore. Most modern descriptions of a vampire, like, describe them as being really pale and gaunt and, like, quite thin and, like, essentially dead looking, with fangs. However, this kind of description of a vampire actually comes from Bram Stoker's Dracula book that was published in 1897.
Yes, we love Bram Stoker.
Woo! Not gonna lie, I might refer to him quite a lot throughout all of this episode, just because
that is absolutely
of the folklore. So in original European folklore, vampires were actually described as being quite bloated with a really healthy red complexion, like they're quite plump, and they usually wore the shroud that they'd been buried in rather than like a nice dapper suit and like a cloak and shit. Essentially, they're like, they've been buried, and then they're coming alive at night and sucking people's blood is the general consensus. So there's loads of weird and wonderful ways that vampires were created. Obviously, being bitten by another vampire is one of the top ways of getting turned. In Slavic and Chinese folklore, any corpse that was jumped over by an animal, particularly a dog or a cat, was at risk of becoming one of the undead. So if you died on your bed and Toothless jumped over you, vampire. It makes it better. Toothless.
Really want that to happen. Like, I'm all up for being a vampire. Yeah, that is amazing. Between a duck and a cat.
Dog.
Oh, a dog.
Or a duck.
You said a duck. It's
that would be so much better than a dog. I wish I had said duck. No.
A duck. I was like, what? A dog. Okay. That's not as fun.
No, but still.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, it's still fun. Don't get me wrong.
In Russian folklore, anyone who is considered a witch or who had rebelled against the Russian Orthodox Church was probably going to turn into a vampire. So if there was a body that had a wound on it that had not been treated with boiling water, they would turn into a vampire. And then it's revenants of evil beings, witches, suicide victims, they could all turn into a vampire. They can also be created by a malevolent spirit possessing a corpse, improper burial rituals, excommunication, being conceived on a certain day, though I couldn't find what days. In southern Russia, someone who was known to talk to themselves was at risk of becoming a vampire.
I volunteer as tribute.
Mate, you've got a few things going for you here. You could Toothless jumping over you.
I'm living for it. So if anyone sees me disappear, like, I'm in the corner of your room at night.
In the 19th century, belief in vampires spread and caused mass hysteria and public hangings. So it's kind of like the witch trials in the 1600s. It was like vampire trials, essentially, in the 1700s. An outbreak of tuberculosis in the 19th century in Rhode Island, Connecticut, and Vermont in the USA caused what is called the New England Vampire Panic. So they thought tuberculosis was caused by the dead consuming the life of their surviving relatives. So tuberculosis is that, it's a disease, old disease of the lungs, isn't it? And you see them in the old films, like in Moulin Rouge, and she coughs and there's blood coming out of her mouth. So people thought that was caused by vampires. But of course, if someone in your family dies of tuberculosis, the chances are the rest of you are going to fucking have it too, because it's contagious.
Isn't it hereditary as well?
I'm not sure.
I mean, I know it's like highly contagious, but I'm sure.
I don't think it's hereditary, because I think it's more of a virus that you can catch, because we've been injected against it, haven't we? It's one of those diseases that's pretty much wiped out because of vaccinations. Anyway, so there was mass hysteria on in this area, basically, because they thought everyone was a vampire just because everyone had tuberculosis. Okay, so evidence that there was a vampire in town included the death of a lot of livestock and villagers all in quick succession. So to find the grave that the vampire was coming from, you would lead a virgin boy riding a virgin stallion through the graveyard or the church grounds. The horse would then refuse to walk past the vampire's grave. How fucked up is that? Like, what the fuck?
It really amazes me how, like, people think, like, virgins have, like, some special ability that they can, like, just sense. I'm like, what's so special about a virgin boy? No, like, I get, like, for the virgin, like, you know, girl, because, like, say yeah. She started, I don't know, like, the sign was, if she started bleeding, that's where, like, the evil spirit was.
Yeah.
But... Or, like, it was telltale, but...
And it had to be a virgin horse as well, a virgin male horse. How do you know that horse has not shagged another horse? Like,
I mean, with a dick that big, I'm sure he's been round a lot.
Probably. Anyway, a much easier way of telling which grave a vampire was coming from is looking for holes in the earth on top of the grave. Like, to me, walking through a churchyard seeing which grave has been disturbed is a lot easier than getting a virgin boy riding a virgin stallion.
I mean, you won't be able to get that now. Like, you won't be able to get a virgin boy and a virgin stallion now.
No. Unless they were very, very young.
Yeah. And then I feel like.
So, corpses thought to be vampires were described as having a healthy appearance with no signs of decomposition. They're thought to be plump with fresh blood on their face. There's no mention of fangs in the old folklore. And then their teeth, hair and nails would have grown despite being dead as well.
Yeah.
So I looked into this, and your hair and your nails, they don't necessarily grow after you've been dead. Like, there's loads of rumours, but it's more that, like, the rest of you kind of shrivels. So it gives the impression that, like, your hair and teeth and nails have grown because they don't shrivel, whereas the rest of you does. So,
yeah, so you know, like... You know, like the shrunken heads for like voodoo dolls and stuff.
I immediately thought of the ones on Harry Potter and the Night Bus.
That's what I was thinking of. Like, it's like we're going to have a bumpy ride.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't do the accent, unfortunately.
No. So, protection methods include garlic, obviously, also, branches of wild rose and hawthorn are said to harm vampires. In Europe, mustard seeds on the roof of your house were said to keep them away.
Okay.
Yeah. Sacred items such as a crucifix, holy water, rosary beads would also work. Some traditions say a vampire has to be invited into your home before they are able to enter. So obviously, not inviting anyone in would prevent them from coming in your home and getting you.
I mean, if someone like Damon Salvatore was like at my door, hello.
Would not say no to that. Come right in, sir. Come on in. So.
Come on in, sir.
So, mirrors placed facing outwards on a door was also thought to stop them from entering. However, not all cultures believed that vampires didn't have a reflection or a shadow, and it's thought that Bram Stoker made this more popular in vampire mythology because one of the things in Dracula is that Dracula does not have a soul, so does not have a reflection in the mirror. So folkloric vampires are usually more active at night. However, they were never considered to be vulnerable to sunlight. That's something that somehow people have made the connection, and I tried to find out where that connection had come from, and no one is really sure, because in Dracula sunlight limits his powers but it doesn't actually kill him, whereas like in Hotel Transylvania, which I watched today, they play on the vampire lore where sunlight harms them, like, and really hurts their skin.
It's the same with Twilight though, when they like stand out and they like suddenly burst into flames, but
yeah and sparkle,
shine bright like a diamond.
So vampires are also believed to be unable to walk on consecrated ground, or to cross running water. So essentially, if there's a vampire terrorizing your village, just move to the other side of the river and you'll be fine.
What does consecrated mean?
Holy. So like,
right, okay, thank you.
Church grounds.
For some reason, my mind went to, okay, so if, so if someone hasn't fucked on the ground.
So if not,
I don't know why. I don't know why my brain instantly went, if someone hasn't shagged on the ground, they can't cross over it.
Yeah.
But that makes more sense, yeah. That
yeah, yeah, yeah. Holy ground, not like sex ground.
I don't know why I thought of that. I just went, right, okay, yeah. Why are people just randomly shagging on the ground?
Why not? Stop. Nothing else to do. It's the 1800s, 1700s, I don't know.
Hey.
So, the methods of destruction to kill a vampire. So yeah. Staking is the preferred method of killing a vampire, usually through the heart with a, like a wooden stake. In Russia, they were stabbed in the mouth with a stake made from ash wood. In Serbia, it was a stab in the stomach with a stake made from hawthorn wood. In Silesia, they preferred oak wood. And aspen was also a popular choice to make the stakes from, as it's believed that Jesus's cross was made out of aspen wood. So there's the connection to Christ there.
Okay.
And then there's a shit ton of prevention tactics to prevent a corpse from becoming a vampire. These were the most interesting to me for some reason. So one example of an anti-vampire burial was where the corpse was buried surrounded by sharp objects, like bits of plough, or like a spear or a weapon or something. So the thought behind that is vampires were thought to swell or bloat. So the idea was that these objects would puncture them as they started to swell in their graves, stopping them from being able to rise and bite people. Romani people pierced steel or iron into the heart of the deceased and buried them with bits of steel in their mouth, over their eyes and between their fingers. Not sure what vampires have got against steel, but
I thought it was silver. Or is that just werewolves?
I don't know. Maybe it's just werewolves. But maybe they didn't have access to silver in a lot of villages. So steel's the same kind of colour.
Yeah, that's true.
So in Bulgaria, they've actually recently, like fairly recently, they found over 100 skeletons with random metal objects just embedded in their torso, like after death.
So was this done post-mortem? Yeah. Or before more, what's the other word to post-mortem?
When you're alive. post-mortem.
Pre-mortem.
Pre-mortem. Yeah, I suppose mortem means death, doesn't it? So post-mortem is after death, whereas pre-mortem is when you're alive.
I've had too much to drink already, Jesus Christ. Anyway, continue.
Well, we are drinking wine and gin at the same time, which seems like such a good, bad idea.
Yeah, mate, if I carry on, I'm just going to be fucked at the end of this.
That's the general idea. In German and Western Slavic areas, they would decapitate the body post-mortem and bury the head. Bury the head between the feet, all behind the buttocks, or even like pretty far away from the body.
Eat that ass like a cupcake. I mean, thank you for elaborating that. It was post-mortem.
Just felt like I needed to.
He just looks at me like, post-mortem. anyway.
They would also put spikes through the post-mortem, spikes through the clothes. Pinning the corpse down into the ground slash coffin so that if they did then like turn into a vampire, they couldn't get up because they were pinned down.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites, I think, imagining a vampire waking up and then being like, oh shit,
oh no shit, oh, I can't I'm stuck do
oh. Trapped. They also put hawthorn in the corpse's socks or drove a hawthorn stake through their legs. Which again makes me laugh because I'm thinking that they just put some wood in his socks and he wakes up and he's like, oh, my feet are burning because there's wood in my socks and he can't go anywhere because he's got wood in his socks.
Oh my God. I instantly thought of like, oh no, I can't move anywhere because I'm so weighed down by my feet. Oh my god, I need to stop drinking. Okay.
They'd also pour boiling water over the grave. I'm not sure what they thought boiling water did, but that's the second time it's been mentioned.
I'm hoping that they mean consecrated. Oh. I'm hoping they mean like boiling holy water or something.
Maybe, I don't know. Another tactic, and I think this is the most logical, is just complete incineration of the body. So they just burn the body, which makes the most sense to me, rather than trying to peg it down or put in wood in his socks. Just fucking burn it, lads, come on.
Like, that is the most sensible reaction to anything. Like, yeah. If I see something and I don't know what it is, like say if it was a spider, okay, yeah. I'm gonna like burn the fucker.
That's an extreme for a spider.
No. Yes, okay. Some people might think that's extreme, but to me, because I've got such a bad phobia of spiders, mm-hmm. I'm just like, burn mm-hmm. the fucker.
Oh.
If anyone has listened to this podcast, yes, we were a little bit tipsy.
Can you tell? In the 19th century, they took the precaution of shooting a bullet through the coffin, which, I'm not going to lie, what's that going to do? Like, they're already dead, Ian, and I know you're trying to make them undead, but I don't think just shooting a bullet willy-nilly into the coffin is going to... You might not even get them through the heart. You might miss them, like, might knock the top of their ear off.
If they're anything like stormtroopers, where they can't aim fucking shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Pew, 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 and it's like, mate, my head is down here, I'm not fucking at the top of the ceiling, then they're not going to be able to do anything, are they?
No, they might. I think it's probably going to be more, it's going to be more effective putting wood in their socks rather than just shooting at the coffin. That is all my facts. I've got one example of someone from Serbia that was thought to be a vampire, and then I've got some stuff about Vlad the Impaler. Let me do Peter.
Okay. Oh, his name's Peter. Hello, Peter. Come on up. Step on up, Peter.
Why are you getting so excited about the name Peter? Actually, I think it's pronounced... I think it might be pronounced... Pitar. Pitar? No, it's Pitar. So, Pitar Blagojevic. Probably killing that pronunciation. Pitar Blagojevic was a Serbian peasant who died in 1725. It was believed that after his death, he then killed 9 of his fellow villagers in one of the earliest and most well-documented cases of vampirism and vampire hysteria. So, in the 8 days after his death, 9 other people in the village of Kisilova died after mysterious 24-hour illnesses. On their deathbeds, they all claimed that Peter had been visiting them in the night and throttling them. His wife said that he had visited her in the night and asked her for his shoes.
I started laughing when you said throttling because I was like, oi, oi,
but
it's so cold.
Wonder what the safe word is.
Aubergine.
My brain said pineapple, so. Anyway.
You're such a pineapple. Cute cucumber. All right, I'm sorry.
Oh, God.
Right, I'm all out. Go on.
Okay. So after he visited her, his wife decided to move to another village for safety reasons. Fair enough. Apparently, he also demanded food from his son, and when his son refused to give him any, Peter then murdered him by biting him and drinking his blood. That was just a rumour, though, so we can't put too much value on that. I heard a rumour that you're a vampire.
For fuck's sake.
So, the villagers decided they wanted to disinter the body with the presence of the local priest to check for signs of vampirism so they could prevent him from rising again. The priest wanted to request permission from the Austrian authorities, but the villagers were worried that the request would take too long to be granted, and by the time it came back, the whole community would be exterminated. they forced it to happen by threatening to flee the village. So upon unburying Peter, they found that his hair and beard had grown. He had new skin and new nails. Been to the salon, got new nails. he had fresh blood all around his mouth. And so those are all signs of vampirism. They staked him through the heart, causing completely fresh blood to flow out of his ears and his mouth. And they then took the sensible option and burned the body, which I think that's what I would do on that occasion. So that case was actually reported in a Viennese newspaper, and it's one of the first cases that was so well documented. Spooky. I mean,
spooky.
The thing is, all of these things that were apparently signs of a vampire and that, they can all be explained away with modern science. So it wasn't that spooky. It's just a bit gory. I don't know. Just see what I'm saying?
I wouldn't be mad if I was a vampire.
No, I wouldn't mind if vampires were real, as long as the population was controlled, so they weren't actually a genuine scary threat to me right now in my house.
Yeah, like, even if they weren't, like, I still wouldn't be mad. I'm like, hello, anyone listening to this? Can you bite my neck? Do the deed.
Actually, if a vampire brought you eternal life, if they could let me have some kids, and then they could bite me, and then I'd look like this forever, then that'd be all right, because there's quite a lot of different degrees and jobs that I'd like to do and give a go.
I'm so glad I'm not the only one, because you know when people are like, okay, so if you was a vampire, what would you do for the rest of your life? And I'm like, get another degree.
Oh, God, yeah.
10 more degrees. I'd be like, Professor Hulk, there's 7 degrees.
Yeah,
but I'd absolutely just be a vampire.
Yeah. I would definitely.
I'm not the only one.
I just feel like there's so much.
I just get another degree and I'm like, thank you.
Yeah. I just feel like there's so much shit out there to learn that I don't have the time or money for or even attention span for now. But if I was immortal and wasn't going to die and was kind of going to be this age forever, then I'd absolutely go out there and learn loads of shit.
Yeah.
I'm glad you agree with me, though.
I am all up for like learning more and like, you know, expanding like, you know, like a memory capacity and like, you know, just brain capacity in general. So I am definitely up for like, you know, learning a lot. However, I am also up for having groupies.
Yes.
If someone was like, yeah, feed on me, and I'm like, all right, no worries. Like, have you seen True Blood?
No, I haven't.
That's actually really good.
I can remember I think it was still at secondary school when someone was like, you need to watch True Blood, it's like vampires and there's a lot of sex.
I mean, don't get me wrong, there's like quite a bit of sex in it, but it's not as bad as like the first few seasons of Game of Thrones.
I mean, I've not seen Game of Thrones either, but
that hurts my soul a little bit. But anyway, so I have a story about someone from the 1600s. Called Elizabeth Bathory.
Now, yes, we love an Elizabeth.
I'm pronouncing her name right. Well, her last name right. So
just call her Liz.
See how it goes. Hey up, Liz. How you doing?
My mum's called Liz. Hi, Mum.
Is her full name Elizabeth?
It is, yeah.
See, I have a friend called Buffy.
Buffy.
And her name, and her name is Elizabeth. Hi, Buffy. If you're listening to this podcast, I'm doing a shout out.
Hello, everybody that we know that's called Elizabeth. I literally just know my mum, I think, that's called Elizabeth. Hi, Mum. Love you, miss you. Carry on, Emma.
Because obviously Buffy's a vampire slayer.
Yeah.
Kind of relevant, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I have a
friend named Buffy, but her actual name is Elizabeth, which I think is great because it's a very unique nickname for that name.
Yeah, that's cute.
I'm just going to have a sippy sip of my drink and then I'll tell you the story.
A little sippy sip and then a little snacky snack of the cucumber.
So I have a story about this Countess Elizabeth Bathory, and she was a Hungarian noblewoman from the noble family of Bathory who owned land in the Kingdom of Hungary. She has been labelled by the Guinness World Records as the most prolific female murderer, though there has been some debate regarding the actual numbers relating to her victims. Bathory and 4 collaborators were accused of torturing and killing hundreds of girls and women between 1590 and 1610. The highest number of victims cited during before his trial was 650.
Oh, that's quite a lot.
Girl, that is impressive.
That is impressive, really, but bad. But why is she killing so many girls and women? Why is she not killing all the men?
So it was rumoured, and I'll tell you a little bit of why she was killing girls and women.
Go for it.
However, this number comes from a servant girl named Susanna that a court official named Jacob, as it's spelt here, had seen the figure in one of the before his private books. The book was never revealed, and Jacob never mentioned it in his testimony. Despite the evidence against Bofori, her family's importance kept her from facing execution. She was imprisoned in December 1610 within Castle of Cheshire.
It wouldn't be an episode if we weren't mispronouncing something. It's fine.
Yeah. I spent ages like listening to the Google translation of this one word in Hungarian.
I did that with bloody Peter Blagojevic's name, and I couldn't say it right when I was reading it, but I think I've just done it without looking at the page.
So, he was imprisoned in December 1610 within Castle of Cheshire. I'm hoping I'm not saying that right. In Upper Hungary, now known as Slovakia.
These Eastern European countries seem to have changed a lot over time, because you've got that bit that was like, it was Hungary, but now it's Slovakia, and I've got some that, well, it was this, and then now it's Romania and Transylvania. And yeah.
Because to be, I don't know geography very well, so I might be wrong, but they used to be all very connected, and used to be onto like one, like,
like regime. I don't know what the...
Yeah.
And there's quite a lot of wars, I think, over territories around those years.
Yeah, before the gained independence.
Yes.
So I think that, you know, they all used to collectively be like either Russia or Hungary or etc. So the story of Bofori's sadistic serial murders are verified by the testimony of more than 300 witnesses and survivors, as well as physical evidence and the presence of horribly mutilated dead, dying and imprisoned girls found at the time of her arrest. Can't speak.
Hmm?
Stories describing Bofori's vampiric tendencies, such as the tale that she bathed in the blood of virgins.
Virgins again, here we go.
To retain her youth. So you know that like theory that like, you know, witches retain their youth and stuff by like bathing in the blood of like virgin girls and stuff.
Yeah.
This probably originates from that.
Oh.
Her story quickly became part of folklore, and her infamy persists to this day. Someone says she inspired Bram Stoker's Dracula. Though there is no evidence to support this hypothesis, nicknames and literary epithets attributed to her include the Blood Countess.
Mm-hmm.
Very fancy. I like that one.
Yeah.
And Countess Dracula.
Ooh, that's like a good that one too. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that kind of sounds like she's just married Dracula. But I
know, slightly.
The Blood Countess is better, I think. I prefer that.
So, regarding the investigation, between 1602 and 1604, after rumours of Bofori's atrocities had spread throughout the kingdom, Lutheran minister Istvan made complaints against her both publicly and at the court in Vienna. The Hungarian authorities took some time to respond to the complaints. Finally, in 1610, King Matthias II assigned Ferzo, ordered two notaries to collect evidence in March 1610. By October 1610, he had collected 52 witness statements.
52?
And by 1611, 52, yeah.
Well, that's quite a lot of witnesses.
I know, yeah. Like, normally, don't you need, like, one or
like
two?
One, yeah. A dog witnessed it, normally, is fine. No. 52 witnesses, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so they managed to collect 52 witness statements, and by 1611, that number had risen to over 300.
Fuck off. So, like, she's absolutely doing some fucked up shit here.
Yeah. Can you imagine if, like, someone murdered someone in, like, England and you managed to get 300 witnesses? It still does not go down in court. because of that fucking shit. So, according to testimonies, before his first victims were girls aged between 10 to 14 years old. Later, Bafori is said to have begun killing daughters of the lesser gentry who were sent to a gynecium by their parents to learn courtly etiquette. Abductions were said to have occurred as well. The atrocities described most consistently included severe beatings, burning or mutilation of hands. There must be some symbolism with them hands, but I don't know it, so I'm just going to leave it out. Biting the flesh off the faces.
Oh, post-mortem or pre-mortem?
It never said, but fuck off. I think it was pre-mortem.
Oh, sorry, carry on. We shouldn't be laughing because these poor girls died.
Oh, it was like decades ago. It's fine.
Centuries.
I mean, I sound really blasé, but nonchalant. Anyway, so biting the flesh off the faces, arms and other body parts, freezing or starving to death. So the use of needles was also mentioned by the collaborators in court. There were many suspected forms of torture carried out by Bafori. According to the Budapest City Archives, the girls were burned with her tongues and placed in freezing cold water. They were also in honey and live ants. Bafori was also suspected of cannibalism, so she's fucking got it all.
She's
the package.
She's like a serial killer, a cannibal, a vampire, just a full-on sadist, really.
Which you know, could quite easily, like, if she was to be around here now, she could quite easily be like, you know, explained with science, but obviously back then they were like, this is fucking horrific, she needs to go down for this.
To be fair, she wouldn't have got away with half of this shit nowadays, would she, though?
Not with the, not with science, no.
Not with maybe 300 witnesses.
Oh my god, no. Yeah, she was there. She puts our name to the test.
Yeah.
Women to the test.
Yep. She's the actual devil.
She is, yes. She was born on a family estate in Royal Hungary in 1560. As a child, before he suffered multiple seizures that may have caused by epilepsy, possibly stemming from the inbreeding of her parents at the time. So she's got inbred lines.
Which,
you know, don't fucking help. So at the time, symptoms relating to epilepsy were diagnosed as falling, sickness, and treatments including rubbing blood of a non-sufferer on the lips of an epileptic or giving the epileptic a mix of non-sufferer's blood and a piece of skull as their episode ended.
So no wonder she was killing all these people to try and drink their blood. She just wanted to stop her epilepsy.
Yeah.
Aww.
So this has led to speculation that before his killings during her later life were parts of her efforts to cure the illness she had been suffering from since childhood. However, there was no hard evidence supporting the speculation.
Oh, that makes me look at her in a different light now.
Yeah. So it could have been like, you know, she could have been raised very wrongly.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people back in them days. So she wouldn't have known better if that's how she'd been brought up, because obviously, you know.
And if she got
royalty, basically, as well.
Yeah. And if she genuinely believed that that would cure her of her illness, then no wonder she just, and obviously it wouldn't, because you can't, well, as far as I know, you can't cure epilepsy by putting a non-sufferer's blood on your lips, but she wouldn't have known any better, so she, it sounds like she was just absolutely desperate to cure herself of
and at that time it would have been really difficult to be epileptic as well, because like there wouldn't have been any ailments,
no like medication or
It does make you feel a little bit sorry for her.
Yeah.
So another proposal made by some sources in order to explain Bafori's cruelty later in her life is that she was trained by family to be cruel.
Mm.
Stories included a young Bafori witnessing brutal punishments executed by her family's officers and being taught by family members involved with Satanism and witchcraft.
So,
witchcraft.
Hey.
That was a really shit accent. from my part. I tried.
What was it supposed to be?
I don't fucking know. Bless my soul.
Bless my soul. Her quiz on a row. Anyway, sorry.
Before he was raised as a Calvinist Protestant, as a young woman, she learned Latin, German, Hungarian, and Greek.
Yeah.
Born into a privileged family of nobility, Bofori was endowed with wealth, education, and a prominent social rank. At the age of 13, before her first marriage, she allegedly gave birth to a child.
Oh.
The child, said to have been fathered by a peasant boy, was supposedly given away to a local woman that was trusted by the Bofori family. Oh. She was engaged at the age of 10.
Ooh.
Her social standing was higher than her husband-to-be, so she refused to change her name, her last name. Yes. The couple married when she was 15 and approximately had 4,500 guests that were invited to the wedding.
That's quite a lot of people.
Yeah. Can you imagine that now in COVID times? Fucking hell.
Fuck off. The germs that are spreading at that wedding. Jesus Christ.
So... this is in regards to her arrest.
Oh.
So on the 30th of December, 1610, Thurzo went before his residence and arrested her and four other people who were servants. According to Thurzo's letter to his wife, his unannounced visit found one dead girl and another living prey, in quotation marks, one living prey girl in the castle. Although it was commonly believed that before he was caught in the art in the act of torture, she was actually having dinner.
Oh, they disturbed her meal.
They did. She complained to one of the bodyguards that her hands were cold, and his response was, "It's nothing, mistress, go lie down." She went to sleep and was found dead the following morning. The location of her body is unknown.
Oh, so she could have just fucked off.
Yeah.
Like, the location of the body is unknown. Could have just disappeared, ran away.
And that is the sudden ending of my story about Elizabeth Bofori.
Oh. So, Vlad the Impaler, like, there's so much mythology around him being, like, a vampire, one of the original vampires. Like, there's a series on Netflix called Love, Death and Robots, or something like that. And they...
Yes!
I love that so much. There's an episode of that where they're exploring the castle in Transylvania and they come across Vlad the Impaler locked in his tomb, and then there's cats. So I was expecting to find loads of vampire mythology around him, but I didn't. But here we go. I'm going to tell him the story anyway. It's quite a condensed version because there's a lot of politics in there about the Ottoman Empire in the 1400s that I just couldn't get my head around. Anyway. So Vlad the Impaler, his actual name, well, not his actual name, I've not got his full actual name here. Anyway, he was Vlad the Third, also known as Vlad Dracula. Keyword, Dracula. Anyway, boosh. Anyway, Vlad the Impaler's dad was called Vlad the Second. So Vlad the Second was known as Vlad Dracul. He was part of a fellowship of knights known as the Order of the Dragon, who had pledged to defend Christianity against the Ottomans. Dracul is the ancient Romanian word for dragon. So Order of the Dragon, his nickname was Vlad Dracul, which is Vlad Dragon. Nowadays in modern Romania, Dracul actually means devil, which is like devil, dragon, like it's the same kind of connotations, isn't it? Like drag. That devil and dragons are not the same thing. What the fuck am I saying? But you get what the point I'm trying to make. The kind of person that Vlad II and Vlad III are is like devil, Dracula words. Anyway, in 1442, Vlad II was the ruler of a territory called Wallachia, which is part of present-day Romania. So Vlad II embarked on a diplomatic mission into the heart of the Ottoman Empire because he needed their help fighting a mutual rival from neighbouring Transylvania. He took along two of his sons, Radu, aged 7, and Vlad III, aged 11. Vlad III, which is our lad Vlad the Impaler, was known as Vlad Dracula, which meant son of Dracul. So his dad is Vlad Dracul, and he is Vlad Dracula. The Ottomans gave Vlad II the military support he needed in return for a paid annual tribute. They also kept Vlad III and Radu hostage to ensure that they kept Vlad II's loyalty. So imagine you're just going on a business trip with your dad, and then he just leaves you there. Bye.
Just cash.
I mean, I don't think it was quite as casual as that. I think there was a little bit more bitterness and politics involved, but essentially that's what happened. So Vlad III and his brother Radu were held hostage in a castle high atop a rocky precipice which overlooked the town of Tokat, which is in Turkey. Recent restorations of this castle have uncovered dungeons and tunnels stretching out in all directions. Like, it's a bit of a mystery, this castle, like, and what the hell all these dungeons and tunnels are for. So it's believed that Vlad could have been held in these. It's believed Vlad Dracula, the Impaler, but he wasn't Vlad the Impaler at this point. He was just a little lad. Anyway, it's believed he could have been held in these dungeons. Him and his brother were held here for 5 years. It was thought that they were given like a fantastic education. I mean, they'd already had a pretty good education because their dad was the king of Wallachia. But apparently the Ottomans gave them an incredible education, looked after them. They learned multiple languages. They learned horse riding. They learned how to fight. They also witnessed quite a lot of torture techniques from the Ottomans, apparently, which when you're between the ages of like 11 and 16, like Vlad Dracula was, you'll see later on the kind of person he becomes. I think that had quite a big impact on him, those witnessing those torture techniques.
Yeah.
So his little brother Radu enjoyed their time there, and he actually kind of stuck with the Ottomans throughout the rest of the politicalness of this story. But that's Radu. We're talking about Vlad Dracula here. So Vlad just got angrier and angrier, and he was just spent the whole time plotting his revenge. So their father presumed they had been butchered for the sake of Christian peace. So he just kind of left them there, presuming they were dead. He was murdered in 1447 by noblemen who were trying to take power of Wallachia. After being released, Vlad returned to Wallachia. So I think that it was believed that because the Ottomans had looked after them, they thought that helping Vlad return to Wallachia and taking his rightful place on the throne, I think they thought it would work in their favour. It didn't. So Vlad Dracula ascended to his rightful position of power in 1456 by murdering the current king. He is seen as a positive figure in Romania today, because they believe he ruled in a just but harsh manner, but it was pretty barbaric. So he wanted revenge on the Ottomans for keeping him captive for so long, on the people that killed his father. So he found out all the names of the people that had been involved in the murder of his dad and invited them to a banquet. He then impaled them all on wooden spikes. They'd literally impale them on the wooden spike and then put the spike up in the ground so the corpse would kind of be hanging from the spike. And I read somewhere as well that they wouldn't even use sharp spikes. They'd use like quite blunt ones, so it would impale them, but all the internal organs would kind of be intact, so it wouldn't kill them very quickly. Brutal.
Oh shit.
Yeah. So he became known for his torture, mutilation, mass murders. He disemboweled people, beheaded them, and boiled his victims alive. He wanted to rid the realm of the scourge of poverty. So he invited all the homeless people / beggars in the land to a feast, locked them all in the building and set the building on fire, burning them all alive. Because he was they're quite strongly Christian, because obviously him and his dad like were defending Christianity. So any woman who lost her virginity before she was married or who cheated on her husband was impaled through the vagina rather than through like the chest or stomach. And then her boobs were often cut off. And the man she had cheated with was forced to eat them.
What the actual fuck, man?
I know, right? I know. And he...
Get a fucking grip!
So, there was also a moment when some Ottoman... So the word is envoys here, but essentially some Ottoman people, like political people, came to talk to Vlad. And when they refused to remove their turbans when talking to him, he nailed them to their heads so they couldn't take them off, killing them. So in 1462, he was at war with the Ottomans, of course. They had an army three times bigger than his, so he employed guerrilla warfare tactics. He would put poison in the wells so that their camp's drinking water would be poisoned. He would burnt a lot of crops. And also, this is one of my favourite parts, actually. Don't know why. But he paid men who were infected with the bubonic plague to go into the enemy's camps and infect all the enemy with the plague. Like, the bubonic plague is the plague that we learn about at school. Like, and he'd just send men with the plague into the enemy's camps, be like, go on, spread your pestilence.
Oh my god.
Think that's so clever though.
So dedicated.
I know, like, but he didn't have a very big army compared to the Ottomans, so he needed to be original.
Smart about it.
Yeah, exactly. I think at some point he realised that he was just not going to win the war out there, so he retreated back to Targov East, which is the main city in Wallachia at the time. When he was back there, he ordered 20,000 Ottomans to be impaled on wooden stakes outside the city. The Ottoman Sultan then arrived, took one look at his men on these spikes being eaten by crows, and then the Sultan was like, nope, and turned around and like left. Which, fair enough, I would too, I think. Just yeah. Like, one look, fuck that, goodbye. So this is the part where that, like, there's so much politics going on, quite a lot of back and forth, that I didn't want to go into too much detail. But at some point, he was captured by the Ottomans, and he was their prisoner for over a decade. But he ended up actually getting married to the Sultan's cousin and was then released. And I think he had kids with her and all sorts. So once he'd married the Sultan's cousin and was released, he went back to Wallachia and reclaimed the throne, because his brother Radu, who'd been king of Wallachia, he died in 1475. So he took the throne back over. But then Vlad the Impaler was killed in battle against the Ottomans around 1476. Apparently he was decapitated, and his head was then taken back to the Sultan as a prize, and they covered it in honey to preserve it and put it on display.
Yeah.
So in that story, like, there's nothing to hint that he could be a vampire or anything. However, there are rumours that he dined on the body of his victims. He liked to dip his bread in their blood before eating it. So, yeah, like, pretty gross. So again, it's a little bit vampirism and cannibalism kind of overlap a little bit.
Yeah.
So this is when I go back to Bram Stoker again, because apparently Bram says that he didn't get any of his inspiration from Vlad the Impaler. However, Vlad the Impaler's name is Vlad Dracula, and Bram Stoker's main character is Dracula. Vlad used to put wooden stakes through people's hearts, which is how you kill a vampire. And also, it's not 100% certain where Vlad the Impaler was born, but they do believe he was born in Transylvania, which again is where Dracula is from. So it's one of those that I think that, so Bram Stoker's book, I think, is based on, partly he got inspiration from Vlad the Impaler, but he also partly got inspiration from all the old European folklores. Then, however, vampires and how they're seen in culture today is very much based on Bram Stoker's book, Dracula. Like,
yeah, it's a very influential book.
Yeah, absolutely. I think all of that is kind of merged, because you can kind of see the progression throughout history on the different tales of vampires in this European culture. Like, there's different, like I said at the beginning, there's different kinds of creatures all over the world that have got vampiric tendencies. Like, there's something called the Impundulu in South Africa, which is a vampire bird. There's something called the Nackzerra in Germany, the Chupacabra, which originated in Puerto Rico, but I'm sure Supernatural do an episode on the Chupacabra. So all over the world. So, but European vampires, I think, definitely inspired Bram Stoker, and then Bram Stoker has inspired the rest of the world after he released that book.
100%, like, because you have to remember as well, Bram Stoker was an English writer, I believe, so obviously all the influence from, like, you know, the English dominating the rest of the world, the first stop was Europe, so
yeah, definitely, you know,
when you're importing all that influence from Europe, like, it's going to have some impact on you, so obviously Bram Stoker used that to his advantage, and then he must have heard about Vlad the Impaler and was just like, yeah, I'm going to base a book similarly.
Yeah, he pinched bits off it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because have you seen Dracula Untold?
No.
So that's a vampire film on Netflix. And Dracula Untold is basically like, you know, the origin story of Dracula and how he, you know, how he became a vampire, basically. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure it's based, you know, some of it's based on Vlad the Impaler.
Yeah, I might watch that then.
It's actually a really good film because it's not teen romance. It's actually, historically accurate, but it's definitely worth a watch.
Yeah. But like, there's statues of I've seen pictures of, I'll put one on the Instagram actually as well. The statues of Vlad the Impaler, and he's kind of growling and he's got these massive fangs. However, the portraits of him, he looks well chill. Like, he doesn't look like scary like these other statues.
Yeah.
So I feel like the legend of him, Vlad the Impaler was like hugely barbaric and a bit of a dick. But I think the legend of him has just grown over time and he's morphed into something that actually he was not a vampire at all. Yeah. It just.
But it was this, it was the same with Elizabeth before. Yeah. Like, there was rumours, so many rumours of her being this and that, and like, you know, doing these things, these horrific things to the bodies, and there was no actual proof of it, so, you know, a lot of it was just hearsay.
Yeah.
And it ended up being like myth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, whereas, you know, some things could actually be true, but because, like, you know, people say it over and over again, the story, but, like, change it every time it's being said.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what's actually being true anymore.
Yeah. So that's Vlad the Lad.
Vlad the Lad. Hey.
Hey.
Oi, oi, Savaloy. However, there is a syndrome called Renfield syndrome. Or known as clinical vampirism, which is an actual obsession with drinking blood, drinking human blood, and this is an actual syndrome that people can have, and it's highly related or caused by schizophrenia.
All right.
So I watched an episode a few days ago on Criminal Minds because I'm watching all of the seasons now, and there was actually an episode based on this. And basically the person has schizophrenia and it ends up causing her to have an obsession with, like, drinking blood. So she kills victims, basically, and drains them of their blood.
Ooh.
So, yeah, it's an actual obsession and it's normally associated with schizophrenia. And it's an obsession with drinking blood. The earliest formal presentation of clinical vampirism to appear in the psychiatric literature with a psychoanalytic interpretation of two cases was contributed by Richard L. Vandenberg and John F. Kelly. So the prior diagnosis, clinical vampirism, is somewhat different from Renfield syndrome. Clinical vampirism, usually connotated as an erotic obsession with blood.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh. See, this is where, like, sadists come into play, I guess. So Renfield syndrome is more of a form of an eating disorder.
Yeah.
Involving living animals. So, like the bugs and rats eaten by Renfield in Bram Stoker's fictional story, Dracula.
Bram Stoker he's just the feature of this episode, isn't he, really? He's the main man.
It should have been an episode just based on him.
Yeah.
Because he's had a massive influence on, like, English literature.
Yeah.
Because, like, some people slate him and think, like, you know, Dracula's a terrible book.
Yeah.
But I think it's absolutely incredible because it's, like, it's got a bit of a homoeroticism. Homoeroticism. That's what I was trying to say. Jesus Christ. in there. You know, it's got vampires in there. It's got, you know, a vampire hunter, well, a monster hunter. You've got Van Helsing in there.
Yeah,
you've got everything. Everything also, that you need.
Yeah, Van Helsing is also such a legendary character. Like, there's films about him, isn't there? It's just this one book has morphed so much culture and mythology.
Yeah, 100%. So, like, people can slate Dracula and think it's a terrible book, but I think it's fantastic. I think, you know, it's really good gothic literature.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's prime gothic literature.
We are big fans.
We are.
Of gothic lit, aren't we?
Yeah. I think it's the first of, you know, the first of the gothic literature. It's like the father of it to, like, bring it out.
Mary Shelley was Frankenstein was before Dracula, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
I think it was after.
I'm Googling that now. Frankenstein was released in 1818 and Dracula was 1897. So Mary Shelley is the mother of gothic literature.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Who run the world? Girls.
Girls. I mean, so her story for Frankenstein was actually based on a ghost story. So obviously the Victorian, like, writers of that time, they had, like, basically, like, a little club that they had,
yeah,
and they were traveling or they were visiting some part of Europe. I can't remember exactly where, but they basically was around a campfire. So it was her, Wordsworth, Chaucer, maybe not Chaucer, some other Victorian writers, and they were and one another person was Shelley's soon to be husband, and they basically, like, tried to scare each other with ghost stories.
Yeah.
And that's where Frankenstein was created.
That's really cool.
It was a ghost story, so, yeah.
That's cool. I'm going to reread Frankenstein and Dracula this year. Because I haven't...
Frankenstein's a really good book.
I've not read either of them since school. I definitely studied Frankenstein at school, but I don't think I studied Dracula.
I did... I studied both in my A-level. Mm. Not A-level. My uni degree,
yeah,
because I did a gothic lit literature.
Yeah, which is... I'm so jealous of that. That sounds so cool.
It was really cool because we did Rebecca as well.
Yeah, that also a good book.
Yeah,
this is turning into a book podcast. Anyway,
yes. Anyway, sorry.
I'm not even mad about that because I love it. So go. Tell me about the disease or whatever you're on.
So there's only a little bit left of the Ranfield syndrome. But the origin, actually, so it was named after the character Renfield in what book?
Dracula!
Hey!
Part of me was so tempted to go, Twilight! Just...
So that's the end of my little scientific research there. So I'm going to be talking about, when I find my pages, so it's called The Vampire Clan.
Ooh.
So... I didn't know about this until I was actually researching on Google, and I just typed in, like, you know, modern vampires of today, and this actually came up. So Roderick Justin Ferrell is an American murderer and cult leader. He was a member of a loose-knit gang of teenagers from Murray, Kentucky, known as the Vampire Clan. Ferrell claimed to be a 500-year-old vampire named Visago, a character he created for himself after becoming obsessed with a role-playing game, Vampire the Masquerade.
Oh.
It was his mother who introduced this game to Roderick. In 1998, Ferrell pleaded guilty to the double slaying of a couple from Eustis, Florida, becoming the youngest person in the USA on death row. Originally sentenced to death, Ferrell's penalty has since been reduced to life without parole.
How old was he when he was sentenced?
30-odd. Right now, he's 40.
Yeah.
So he wouldn't have been 30-odd, actually. He would have been...
A lot younger than that.
In his early 20s.
Yeah. Shit, man.
I know, yeah. So, on November 25th, 1996, Naomi Ruth Queen and Richard Wendorf were found by their daughter, Jennifer Wendorf, beaten to death.
Oh.
While Richard Wendorf was asleep on the couch and Ruth Wendorf was in the shower, Ferrell and his accomplice Howard Scott Anderson had entered the home through the unlocked garage, picking up the murder weapon, which was a crowbar. Before Richard had even awakened, Beryl had beaten him multiple times, fracturing both his skull and his ribs, almost instantly knocking him out and killing him shortly after.
Oh.
When Ruth had found Beryl and Anderson in the home moment later, Beryl bludgeoned her to death with the crowbar. He claimed in his confession that his original plan was that he was going to allow her to live, so yeah. He wasn't going to kill her. However, she attacked him first by throwing a hot cup of coffee over him.
Yes, go girl.
And obviously this angered her. This angered him, so he ended up beating her to death.
Little prick.
Yeah. So Richard was found bearing burn marks in the shape of a V, and this was associated by Ferrell as a sign for each person that was considered in his vampire cult.
Mm.
So the victims were the parents of Heather Wendorf, a longtime friend of Rod's, whom he was helping run away from home, she described as hell, in quotation marks.
Oh.
Heather and the other girls that were with Ferrell and Anderson were not at the Wendorf house when the murders took place. Charity Kesey, I believe how that's what you pronounce her last name, and her friend Donna Cooper had driven Heather to her boyfriend's apartment so she could say goodbye before leaving for New Orleans.
So the daughter was planning to run away because she hated her life at home, and one of the people from the cult was going to help her do that, and then the cult leader went in and killed her parent.
Yeah.
Oh.
To be honest, it wasn't really necessary because if she wanted to run away, then she could have just run away. However, I think he was just a bit crazy, to be honest. Yeah. He was just a bit of an arsehole, so he ended up killing her parents. So after 4 days of driving through four states, the group was found in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Forgot there in the end. It is believed that Ferrell liked an arcade in New Orleans and was heading there. One of the girls' charity placed a call to her grandmother in South Dakota. Group needed money and Charity thought her grandmother could help. However, her grandmother informed the police of her whereabouts and helped police arrest the teen.
Yes, you go, grandma.
And that's pretty much how they got caught. And there's nothing like vampiric related apart from the fact that they like burned the letter V into one of the, you know, the dad's neck.
Yeah. So they were wannabe vampires. They weren't even the real deal.
Well, he claimed to be like a 500-year-old vampire, so I think he either made that up to like be more famous, or
he was seriously mentally ill.
Because I was trying to like, you know, look for further information as to why he thought he was a 500-year-old vampire, but there was nothing actually on him, so I think he was just making up to like, you know, I don't know, add flavor to his story, I guess.
Yeah, one of those pricks that does it for the fame.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, this is the thing. Like, this is going to sound really weird and I can't quite get my words and thoughts out properly because I've had quite a lot of gin and tonic sangria. Imagine, vampires exist in the world.
Yeah.
But us normal humans don't actually believe that they exist, right? They're a mythical creature as far as we're aware. However, you get this one guy saying that he's a 500-year-old vampire. He could be telling the truth. He could be telling the truth, but we're all just like, what? They're not real. He's absolutely insane. And then he just gets like the death penalty and stuff. And then there's all these other vampires in the secret vampire community that are all cringing and going, oh, what a prick. Like, what the fuck? What's he doing?
What would you do though? Like today we found out that like vampires were actually real. Like, what would you do?
I would not believe it until I actually met one. I think it's the same with ghosts, I think, for me, is that I don't quite believe it until I have actual proof myself.
Yeah.
But then, well, I say that, but then I've never actually met a shark and I know they're real. So I don't, like, I think it would take...
I'm sorry, can we just rewind to the fact that you were like, I've never met a shark, but I know they're...
Yeah, but do you see what I mean? Like, there's so many.
I completely understand.
Like, there's so many animals. So here I am saying that I would need proof myself, physical, eye contact type shit to believe in ghosts or vampires fully. But yeah. But there's so many animals out there that I've never seen. I don't know. I think I would need some sort of scientific evidence and for it to actually become a thing before I believed in it properly.
This makes me sound like I'm like a fucking groupie or some shit, but I just don't care. I definitely would turn around and be like, okay, if you're a vampire, turn me into one.
Oh, yeah. Because then I could learn all the shit.
Yeah. Because, like, you know, if you had a choice between being a vampire or a werewolf, what would you choose? Like, I'd always choose vampire, 100%. I don't give a shit.
Right.
Always a vampire.
In Twilight, I was absolutely team werewolf. They were just so much more normal and so much more welcoming. I don't know. It just felt I was team werewolf, I think, rather than vampire.
I was definitely team vampire, but that was because of Alice. Like
Alice and Jasper were the best.
Yeah. In terms of like Twilight, Alice was very welcoming, which I like to consider myself to be like that if I was a vampire.
Yeah, but I feel like the werewolves like they are in Twilight, they can just turn into a wolf whenever they want. I think I'd rather be that kind of werewolf rather than the Professor Lupin. Every time there's a full moon, it's really painful. He's a completely different person and can't control himself. If that was what werewolves are like, then I'd rather be a vampire.
I mean, if I could choose, I would love to be an animagus.
Yes.
In all honesty.
I'd just fucking rather be a wizard, an animagus wizard, yeah.
You're a wizard, Harry.
I'm a what? What but, animal would you be, though, if you're like me, animagus?
A cheetah.
Would you?
Yeah, they're quite fast, and cheetahs are actually my favourite big cat.
Are they?
Just because they're quite fast, and I don't know, I think they're quite underrated in the cat community.
Yeah. In the cat community.
Oh no! Speaking on behalf of cheetahs all around the world, what would you be?
I'd just be a normal house cat, like McGonagall.
Just cash. Would you be a ginger one?
No. I think I'd be black. A black cat.
Oh, okay. Superstitious.
A little bit witchy, I think. Or a Maine Coon.
Did we just, like, somehow subconsciously agree that we were just going to be cats? Like, we could be any animal in the fucking world. And I went, I'm going to be a cat.
Yeah, but at least you're a cheetah. I'm just, like, a bog standard chilling on the rug in front of the firehouse cat. But that's because
don't this normal house.
No, I'm not. Because
videos.
Like, yeah.
There was a little kid that was like, I don't know, riding a, you know, its bike. It was like a toddler, minding his own business, and then a pit bull came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And tried to attack the kid, and the cat got sent to this shit.
Yeah.
Fucking went ballistic and
saved that kid. There's also a video of a kid that looks like it's going to fall off a balcony and the cat swoops in and is like, no, and boops them back. No,
cats
and
no, ma'am.
They do. Cats and no. I think as a person, my personality is already quite like a cat because I'm very needy and affectionate, but only on my terms. I also love sleeping and eating and just doing nothing apart from every so often.
Would your Patronus be a cat?
Absolutely, 100%.
Okay. See, I think apparently, according to Pottermore, my Patronus is a swift.
Oh.
Which is one of the, a type of small bird.
Yeah.
However, I don't actually know what I'd be. I generally think I'd be like a honey badger, because it represents Hufflepuff. So
yeah. I was just about to say. A badger. I'm sure my Patronus on Pottermore was something like a badger.
I'm actually tempted to get a tattoo of a badger.
Yeah.
Like a geometric badger.
That would be cool. Because
it represents my, my house.
Yeah. But we just want to put it out there that we both think J.K. Rowling and her anti-trans thing is shit.
That was a terrible way of explaining it.
Yeah, but she's turned out... Oh, I don't really want to talk about this on our podcast. We've just been talking about Harry Potter for so long and I just need to put it out there that I don't agree with any of her anti-trans views.
Yeah, that's completely understandable though, isn't it? Like, I mean, everyone's got views and everyone can disagree and not, and agree and believe in what they want to believe. But at the end of the day, it's what's morally right.
Yeah, and she's not believing in a whole whole group of humans. It's just a bit of a shitty thing to do when your book is supposedly about inclusivity of everybody.
Yeah, because obviously Harry Potter was based on, like, you know, the minorities that were being bullied by the majorities, basically. So, you do go back on your words a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I genuinely think that, like, my Patronus in real life, if it was, like, a possible aspect of life, would be a retriever or a Labrador.
Aww. I'm 100%.
So, funnily enough, I am a dog person. However, mm-hmm. I own two cats.
Yep.
Somehow.
No, you are absolutely like a golden retriever or a Labrador.
Yeah.
Because they're so lovely.
Like, I know. Oh, like, I've got a Labrador. Well, my mum and dad have a Labrador back at home called Milo. He's a black one. And they're just amazing. They're just, dogs are just incredible creatures. And we don't deserve them.
No, but back in the 1700s, they were jumping over people's corpses and turning them into vampires, so...
Yeah, even though I thought it was a fucking dog.
Dog. I really wish it was a duck instead of a dog, but, you know.
I was like, why is she saying duck?
I didn't think my accent had gone that stokey, but maybe it has.
No,
anyway,
it's just because I was absolutely pissed as a fart, and I was like, a duck makes sense. Okay, today's lesson is...
Don't talk to yourself constantly, else you will turn into a vampire.
Like me.
Like Emma.
I mean, I talk to my cat, so I'm fucking screwed.
Actually, right, this is back to a conversation we had previously.
Okay.
If vampires became a thing and you volunteered as tribute to become a vampire and become a vampire, I would then ask you if it hurt. And then I'd probably, like, get you your opinion on it once you became a vampire. And then I'd get you to turn me. That's what I'd do, depending on your response.
What, if it hurts?
Yeah, like, if... No. If it's, like, a... Because if it's horrendous experience and you don't think it's worth it, then, of course, then I wouldn't do it. But if you then were like, yes, I'm buzzing, I'm a fucking vampire, it's not that bad, it's worth it, I'd be like, yeah, sure, bitch, come and bite me.
You're the second person to tell me that.
You'd start off your own little cult of vampire groupies.
I've already got some groupies going on here.
Yeah, we're not even vampires yet. On that bombshell, thank you for listening to today's episode. Hope you enjoyed it. Please head over to our Instagram, which is at Gin and Spooks, to see the photo dump for everything we've talked about today. If you don't have Instagram, we also have a blog, which is ginandspooks.wordpress.com, and everything will also be on there.
If you have any ghost stories of your own or even some drink suggestions, please email them over to us at ginandspooks@gmail.com or DM us on Instagram.
And we have a Facebook group as well.
We also have a Facebook group, yeah.
Which is Gin and Spooks Podcast. Just search on Facebook and I think you should be able to find us.
Yeah.
I think. Anyway, thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.